25. By government high-velocity hopper, piloted by a bored, heavy-set professional sergeant named Irving Blauford, Lars raced back to New York and Mr. Lars Incorporated. "This dame," Sergeant Blauford said, "is she that Soviet weapons fashion designer? You know, the one?" "Yes," Lars said. "And she coded?" "Yep." "Wowie," Sergeant Blauford said, impressed. The hopper, stone-like, dropped to the roof of the Mr. Lars Incorporated building, the small structure among towering colossi.
"Sure, a little space you got there, sir," said Sergeant Blauford. "I mean, is the rest of it subsurface?"
"Afraid not," Lars said stoically.
"Well, I guess you don't need no great lot of hardware."
The hopper, expertly handled, landed on the familiar roof field. Lars jumped forth, sprinted to the constantly moving down ramp, and a moment later was striding up the corridor toward his office. As he started to open the office door, Henry Morris appeared from the normally locked side exit.
Marin's in the building.
Lars stared at him, his hand on the doorknob.
"That's right," Henry nodded. "Somehow, maybe through Koch, she found out about Topchef coming back from Iceland with you. Maybe KVB agents in Paris tipped her off in vengeance. God only knows."
"Has she got to Lilo yet?"
"No, we intercepted her in the outer public lobby."
"Who's holding on to her?"
Bill and Ed McIntyre from the drafting department. But she's really sore. You wouldn't believe it was the same girl, Lars. Honest, she's unrecognizable."
Lars opened his office door. At the far end, by the window, alone in the room, stood Lilo, gazing out at New York.
"You ready to go?" Lars said.
Lilo, without turning, said,
"I heard. I have terribly good hearing. Your mistress is here, isn't she? I knew this would happen. This is what I foresaw."
The intercom on Lars' desk buzzed, and his secretary, Miss Grabhorn, this time with panic, not with disdain, said,
"Mr. Lars, Ed McIntyre says that Ms. Fain got away from him and Bill Manfredi, and she's out of the pub lob and she's heading for your office."
"Okay," Lars said.
He grabbed Lilo by the arm, propelled her out of the office and along the corridor to the nearest up-ramp. She came ragdoll-like, passively. He felt as if he were lugging a lightweight simulacrum devoid of life or motivation, a weirdly unpleasant feeling. Did Lilo not care any longer, or was this just too much for her? No time to explore the psychological ramifications of her inertness. He got her to the ramp and onto it, and the two of them ascended, back up toward the roof with its field and waiting government hopper. As he and Lilo emerged onto the roof, stepped from the up-ramp, a figure manifested itself at the up-terminus of the building's one alternate up-ramp, and it was Marin Fain. As Henry Morris had said, she was difficult to recognize. She wore her high-fashioned Venusian wub-fur ankle-length cloak, high heels, a small hat with lace, large hand-wrought earrings, and oddly, no makeup, not even lipstick. Her face had a lusterless, straw-like quality, a hint almost of the sepulchre, as if death had ridden with her across the Atlantic from Paris, and then up here now to the roof. Death perched in her eyes, gazing out fatbird-like and impassive, but with guileful determination.
"Hi," Lars said.
"Hello, Lars," Marin said measuredly. "Hello, Miss Topchef."
No one spoke for a moment. He could not recall ever having felt so uncomfortable in his entire life.
"What say, Marin?" he said.
Marin said,
"They called me direct from Bulganingrad. Someone did Sirkeb or acting for it. I didn't believe it until I checked with Koch."
She smiled, and then she reached into her mail pouch-style purse, which hung from her shoulder by its black leather strap. The gun that Marin brought forth was positively the smallest that he had ever seen. The first thought that entered his mind was that the damn thing was a toy, a gag. She had won it in a nickel gum machine. He stared at it, trying to make it out more exactly and remembering that he was, after all, a weapons expert. And then it came to him that it was genuine, Italian-made, to fit into women's purses. Beside him, Lilo said,
"What is your name?"
Her tone, addressed to Marin, was polite, rational, even kindly. It astonished him, and he turned to gape at her. There was always something new to be learned about people. Lilo completely floored him. At this critical moment, as she and he faced Marin's tiny, dangerous weapon, Lilo Topchev had become ladylike and mature, as socially graceful as if she had entered a party in which the most fashionable cogs abounded. She had risen to the occasion, and it was, it seemed to him, a vindication of the quality, the essence, of the stuff of humanity itself. No one could ever again convince him that a human being was simply an animal that walked upright and carried a pocket handkerchief and could distinguish Thursday from Friday, or whatever the criterion was. Even old Orville's definition, cribbed from Shakespeare, was revealed for what it was, an insulting and cynical vacuity. What a feeling, Lars thought, not only to love this girl, but also to admire her.
I am Marin Fain,
Marin said, matter-of-factly. She was not impressed. Lilo hopefully extended her hand, evidently as a sign of friendship.
I am very glad, she began, and I think we can...
Raising the tiny gun, Marin fired. The filth-encrusted and yet clean, shiny little gadget expelled what once would have been certified as a dum-dum cartridge in its primordial state of technological development. But the cartridge had evolved over the years. It still possessed the essential ingredient, that of exploding when it contacted its target, but in addition, it did more. Its fragments continued to detonate, reaping an endless harvest that spread out over the body of the victim and everything near him. Lars dropped, fell away instinctually, turned his face, and cringed. The animal in him huddled in a fetal posture, knees drawn up, head tucked down, arms wrapped about himself, knowing there was nothing he could do for Lilo. That was over. Over forever. Centuries could pass like drops of water, unceasing, and Lilo Topchev would never reappear in the cycles and fortunes of man. Lars was thinking to himself like some logical machine built to compute and analyze coolly, despite the outside environment. I did not design this, not this weapon. This predates me. This is old and ancient monster. This is all the inherited evil carried here out from the past, carted to the doorstep of my life and deposited, flung to demolish everything I hold dear, need, desire to protect. All wiped out just by the pressure of the first finger against a metal switch, which is part of a mechanism so small that you could actually swallow it, devour it in an attempt to cancel out its existence in an act of oral greed, the greed by life for life. But nothing would cancel it now. He shut his eyes and remained where he was, not caring if Marin chose to fire again, this time at him. If he felt anything at all, it was a desire, a yearning, that Marin would shoot him. He opened his eyes. No longer the up-ramp, the roof-field, no Marin Fane, no tiny Italian weapon. Nothing in its ravaged state lay nearby him. He did not see the remnants, sticky, organic, lashing and decomposed and newly made, the bestial malignancy of the weapon's action. He saw, but did not understand, a city street, and not even that of New York. He sensed a change in temperature, in the composition of the atmosphere. Mountains, ice-topped, remote, were involved. He felt cold, and he shivered, looked around, heard the honking racket of surface traffic. His legs, his feet ached, and he was thirsty. Ahead, by an autonomic drugstore, he saw a public vidphone booth. Entering it, his body stiff, creaking with fatigue and soreness, He picked up the directory, read its cover. Seattle, Washington. And time, he thought. How long ago was that? An hour? Months? Years? He hoped it was as long as possible. A fugue that had gone on interminably, and he was now old, old and rotted away, windblown, discarded. This escape should not have ever ended, not even now. And in his mind, the voice of Dr. Tote came incredibly, by way of the parapsychological power given him. That voice, as it had on the flight back from Iceland, hummed and murmured to itself. Words not understandable to him, and yet their terrible tone, their world, as Dr. Tote had hummed to himself an old ballad of defeat. Und die Hunde schnurren an den alten Mann. And then all at once Dr. Tote in English told him, And the dogs snarl, Dr. Tote said, within his mind, at the aged man. Dropping a coin into the phone slot, he dialed Lanferman Associates in San Francisco. Let me talk to Pete Freed. Mr. Freed, the switchboard chick at Lanferman said brightly, is away on business. He cannot be reached, Mr. Lars. Can I talk to Jack Lanferman, then? Mr. Lanferman is also... I guess I can tell you, Mr. Lars. Both of them are at Festoon, Washington, D.C. They left yesterday. Possibly you could contact them there. Okay, he said. Thanks, I know how. He rang off. He next called General Nitz. Step by step, his call mounted the ladder of the hierarchy, and then, when he was about ready to call it quits and hang up, he found himself facing the CNC.
Koch couldn't find you, Nitz said. Neither could the FBI or the CIA.
The dogs snarled, Lars said, at me. I heard them. In all my life, Nitz, I never heard them before.
Where are you?
Seattle.
Why?
I don't know.
Lars, you really look awful. And do you know what you're doing or saying? What's this about dogs?
I don't know what they are, he said, but I did hear them. General Nitz said,
She lived 6 hours, but of course there was never any hope, and anyhow, now it's over. Or maybe you know this.
I don't know anything.
They held up the funeral services, thinking you might show up, and we kept on trying to locate you. Of course, you realize what happened to you.
I went into a trance state.
And you're just now out?
Lars nodded.
Lilo is with...
What?
Lars said.
Lilo is at Bethesda, with Ricardo Hastings, trying to develop a usable sketch. She's produced several so far, but...
Lars said... Lilo is dead. Marin killed her with an Italian Beretta Pelfrag 12 pistol. I saw it. I watched it happen.
Regarding him intently, General Nitz said, Marin Fain fired the Beretta 12 Pelfrag pistol that she carried with her. We have the weapon, fragments of the slug, her fingerprints on the gun. But she killed herself, not Lilo.
After a pause, Lars said, I didn't know.
Well, General Nitz said, when that Beretta went off, somebody had to die. That's how those Pelfrag pistols are. It's a miracle it didn't get all three of you.
It was suicide. Deliberate, I'm sure of it. Lars nodded. She probably never intended to kill Lilo, even if she thought so herself.
He let out a ragged sigh of weariness and resignation. The kind of resignation that was not philosophical, not stoical, but simply a giving up. There was nothing to be done. During his trance state, his fugue, it had all happened, long, long ago. Marin was dead. Lilo was at Bethesda. He, after a timeless journey to nowhere, into emptiness, had wound up in downtown Seattle. As far away, evidently, as he could manage to get from New York and what had taken place, or what he had imagined had taken place.
Can you get back here? General Nitz said. To help out Lilo?
Because it's just not coming. She takes her drug, that East German goofball preparation, goes into her trance, placed, of course, in proximity to Ricardo Hastings, with no other minds nearby to distract her. And yet when she sobers up, she has only the same old sketches derived from oral Giacomini. No. You're sure? His limp, abused mind came awake. These sketches are entirely different from anything she's done before. We've had Pete Fried examine them, and he agrees. And she agrees. And they're always the same. He felt horror. Always what? A calm down, not of a weapon at all, not of anything remotely resembling a time warpage generator. They're of the physiological, anatomical, organic substance of... General Nitz hesitated, trying to decide whether to say it over the probably KVB-tapped vidphone. Say it, Lars grated. Of an android. An unusual type, but still an android. Much like those that Lanferman Associates uses subsurface in its weapons proving. You know what I mean? As human as possible. Lars said, I'll be there as soon as I can.